Look at me, I am the captain now.
She held events at one of the restaurants that was named in the fraud case and had a former staffer who was convicted in the fraud investigation, saying, wow, there's a lot of potential links here. How much did she know about that?
Why do you think this fraud was allowed to get so widespread?
This also has an impact on Somalis because we are also taxpayers in Minnesota.
Somalians contribute less than $900 a person to local and state taxes combined. I'm sure you understand that is incredibly low. That's actually lower than I thought it would be.
Now the investigators have come back. They've got convictions on $2 billion in stolen stuff through three scams. Now it's up to $8 billion they've discovered just since they really started focusing on it last week.
But, you know, when you come to this country, you got to learn which side of the road to drive on. You got to learn to stop at stop signs. And you got to learn not to defraud the American people.
It's not just the Somali diaspora that has come over here and decided to engage in this criminal behavior. It's a industrial complex with the Democratic Party that enables and turns a blind eye to this behavior because they benefit from it through political support.
A lot of Somalis in my district feel like there's not enough community resources, there's not enough available for them because they're working class folks and came here refugee status and fighting poverty.
There's a reason Minnesota ranks as the top. Lowest childhood poverty, best place for children to live. People are taking advantage of that. They're going to prison. That is totally disconnected with demonizing an entire group of people who came here fleeing civil war and created a vibrant community that makes Minnesota and this country better. But that's Donald Trump. Deflect, demonize, come up with no solutions. He's not going to help fix anything on fraud. My God, there's a big difference between fraud and corruption. And corruption is something he knows about.
Billions of it sent back to terror groups.
Hey! Look at me.
Sure.
Look at me. Sure. I'm the captain now.
You've got 23 child care or daycare centers either closed or under investigation. The fraud may go as high as $100 million. Now, think about that. In fiscal year 2018, Minnesota received $120 million in federal funding. The state contributed about $50 million in matching and maintenance funds. And we may have a fraud case of nearly $100 million in this state, with money then being transferred out of the country via MSP Airport.
The children didn't exist. So you mentioned the spreadsheets where they just used a random name generator to make up names of non-existent children to show to the state. We really are feeding all these kids, but the kids didn't exist. The food didn't exist.
The vast majority of those, what is it, over 90%, come from one province that is a special tribe and a mafia. And it's all run by a mafia system.
And you know, a six-word text from Bach to one of her staff members might have been the most stunning. She wrote, "We may have become the mob." Both Bach and Saeed are charged with wire fraud and bribery connected to a federal pandemic relief program. Prosecutors say nearly $250 million went through Feeding Our Future to sites that falsely claim to serve thousands of meals a day.
So a Somali-American politician here in Maine, Abdullahi Ali, has placed a murder bounty on a journalist for reporting a fraud scandal for millions of dollars involving MaineCare.
If you beef one Somali, you beef every Somali. If there's one thing about Somalis, they are going to ride out for their Somali brothers and sisters. They are going to crash out.
70% of the people coming to the U.S., period, globally, the H-1B visas are from one province, and it's its own mafia that doesn't work with any of the other Indians. That's why once they got control 30 years ago, And they grease Congress's skids, they don't let anybody in but their group. You're letting one clan in.
Three centuries ago, our mothers and fathers followed a promise across the ocean. Somali hands opening a new map. Somali hearts reading the sky. Here, they found a land of rivers and stars. They named it the way the wind whispered, Minnesota.
Minnesota was promised to us Somalis 3,000 years ago. And if you disagree, you're an anti-Kushite bigot.
So the average American, whether they're black or white or whatever, isn't really involved in politics, doesn't donate money, doesn't get engaged. They do. And they're a major game changer. And the average Muslim has six kids. The average person in the West, like 1.5. Two adults, 1.5 kids on average. And they say, I'm having a bunch of kids, putting them all on welfare because I'm taking over.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist,
or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexShowStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. But now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rated. 5 milligrams of this a day. Bottom line, this is tasty, it's delicious, it's good for you, it helps children, it helps middle-aged people, and it really helps old people. If you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome to the fourth hour of The Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We're going to be talking about the Middle East, Islam, Judaism, Zionism, and Western civilization, and how these civilizations are actually somewhat incompatible. Both Islam and Judaism come from a derivation of what we call sometimes the Abrahamic tradition. But in reality, if you read the New Testament, if you believe Christianity, we can't say that there's three Abrahamic faiths. Paul's very clear in Galatians 3, for example, that the only Abrahamic faith that counts is that in Christ. And so to be baptized into Christ makes you a son of God, makes you the true son of Abraham. Thus, it was never merely genetic descent that made a person a son of Abraham. Abraham himself was a convert. And also Islam, if you're aware of, for example, the Islamic dilemma, which we've covered in the fourth hour in an entire segment, deals with the fact that the Quran says you can look to previous divine revelation in the Torah and in the Christian scriptures to confirm what the Quran, the new revelation, says centuries after the New Testament. The problem is that there are many, many, many places in scripture that totally contradict the claims of the Quran. So that means that the Quran now decides what is the prior revelation that confirms the new revelation, and it just happens to be anything that contradicts the new revelation. So just like any cult, the prior revelation is all canceled out. The new revelation takes precedence, but it's defeated by that very fact because the dilemma can't answer why it would require you to go back to something that's corrupted, supposedly, to confirm the new thing. But we're going to not talk really about a lot of theology today. We're going to talk about the actual structure of both entities like the radical Muslim groups that are being intentionally put into the West, that have been funded by the West for over a century, going back to the British imperial structure. And also that's not antithetical, really, to many of the interests from the Israeli or the Zionist perspective, because as many rabbis have said, as Alex, I think, last week or the week before, played a clip of many rabbis saying that Islam is the broom of Judaism. It comes through to wipe away with its militant, supposed monotheistic faith, the Edom of Christianity. We heard, for example, somebody said to ask Netanyahu what book he was reading, and he said he was reading a book by a person named Strauss on the subject of Rome being Edom, or Western civilization being Edom from Scripture, and that the Jewish Messiah would not come back until the destruction of Edom. And so we can see this entire push then for ecumenism and the globalist Abrahamic faith there that you see with Francis and now Leo continuing that agenda as Francis 2.0. It continues full stop, full steam, without any road bumps or roadblocks except for authentic Orthodox Christianity. Let's talk about some of these radical groups and their history. And we're going to be going from an FBI consultant, an FBI informant, who wrote a couple really important texts that they don't necessarily lay out every detail or every angle, but they're good introductions to Islam, or you can apply the same principle to the Muslim Brotherhood or to Al-Qaeda. Paul Williams, who was an FBI consultant, wrote one book that we've covered in the past many times called Operation Gladio, which deals with the CIA's stay-behind units throughout Europe to deal with a potential NKVD invasion of Europe. But he also wrote a book early on, right after the Big Nine event, after 9/11, called Al-Qaeda, Brotherhood of Terror. And this was a really good introduction to the basics of Al-Qaeda ideology, its structure. And the reason we want to understand this is that this is the type of Islam that the West is behind and supports. It goes back to the British imperial structure of how to co-opt and utilize Wahhabism, radical Islam, for example, to control Mecca. At least that was the old British imperial design, to make this rabid form of Salafi Islam the counterbalance to the Ottomans as the Ottomans waned in power. And so the British Empire then came to the world stage after this period to kind of dominate. But they also had a really important role in running the drug trade. We've covered that in the past, so we're not going to talk about all that. But it's interesting to note that Al-Qaeda also, as it rose to prominence in the 70s and 80s, out of the alliance between Zbigniew Brzezinski, Robert Gates, and others under Carter to set up this counterbalance in Afghanistan against the Soviets. But that region, of course, is very important because of the control of opium and poppies. And that's part of the way that Al-Qaeda began to get its power and to get its wealth. But of course, really, this dates back to a couple of characters that I'm sure you've heard of in the 80s, people like Ayman al-Zawahiri, who is a figure that worked together with others like bin Laden to fund and to train people at the base. The base was the headquarters in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Peshawar back in the 1980s for the training for what will become Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, of course, then morphs into other entities like ISIS. And again, this is a specific type of controlled skeletal front group that recruits and embraces a kind of death cult ideology, which makes it very amenable as a proxy force. That's why it's so useful, not just to the West, to the CIA and British intelligence, but also to Israel. Israel has a history of openly saying and admitting that they support these types of groups, particularly more recently in regard to Timber Sycamore and the overthrow of Assad to bring in al-Nusra, and then to bring the former al-Nusra guy, Jolani, to New York to parade him around and to thank him. Now, there was a recent Representative Joe Wilson, for example, who was calling out the Orthodox Church as a giant operation of Putin, particularly the Russian Orthodox Church in America, which is absurd because the origins of the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia actually date back to the Cold War and people fleeing the persecution of the Bolsheviks, the KGB, and the NKVD. So it really doesn't make any sense to just blanket assume that everyone in the Russian Orthodox Church in the West, not just in America, but potentially throughout Europe, that they're all somehow agents of Putin when there's nothing about an autocephalous independent church that requires it to submit to Putin. But again, this is the power structure's means by which it controls and tries to steer religion. We talk about this often on my channel, and we've talked about for many years. We've interviewed tons of people. There's a great article by Rachel Wilson on her Substack that goes into the history of NGOs, think tanks, and foundations trying to subvert Christianity and to turn it into a form of soft power. The doctrinal warfare program of the CIA throughout the 1950s, 60s, the Cold War, et cetera, which played a key role in helping to determine in what ways the Vatican II documents would go, particularly documents like Gaudium et Spes, which is the Vatican II document on political theory. It moves the church, that church, into a socialist Marxist direction. It argues for open borders, chain migration, de-armament, etc. All the types of leftist sort of Klaus Schwab ideology isn't just new with Francis or Leo. That kind of ideology, again, goes back to the acceptance at Vatican II of Gaudium et Spes as its official teaching, politically speaking. But to get back to the religious engineering and steering that goes on with these types of groups, and in the, particularly the case of Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda is a great test case because it's such an obvious open and shut case for Western support, Western intelligence support and use for Islam. And this does not mean that I am saying Islam is good. So even though I think that there's a degree of real opposition between the West and, say, Iran, that doesn't mean I support a war with Iran or that I support or would defend Shia Neoplatonic ideology. It's just as crazy. It's just a weirder, kind of more obscure flavor of Islam with maybe a little bit more, say, above 80-90 IQ, whereas the tendency of the sort of Al-Qaeda branch and flavor tends to be more so 90-80 and under IQ. For example, Modern Day Debate recently hosted a pretty popular debate with Andrew Wilson and Daniel Hakikachu. As you probably may know, I've done two debates in the past with Daniel Hakikachu, one of which last year got millions of views. It was a very popular debate on Fresh and Fit. And then Daniel recently debated again with Andrew, but this time it wasn't about Islamic theology. It was about Islamic practice. And what we're beginning to notice is that people in America, people in the West are absolutely waking up. Unfortunately, it's partly due to millions of Islamic third world people being brought in. They're beginning to wake up to the realities of what this death cult really teaches. It actually teaches things like child brides, child marriage, total enslavement, weaponized deception until you gain power. That is actually in the Quran. It says that you can smile with your mouth and hate in your heart is the actual text of the Quran when it talks about how to deceive those when you're in the minority. And Alex has mentioned this. It's absolutely true. 10 years ago, as I said before, I really studied Islam and debated these people. I didn't really think that. I thought, oh, well, you know, Islam's just another monotheistic religion. It's not that crazy. It's just, you know, it's being used as a patsy after 9/11, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I do think that Islam was to a degree used as a patsy after 9/11, but it doesn't make Islam or the religion true. So it's possible to hold both positions. You don't have to be an anti-Islamic neocon Christian dispensationalist or some sort of pro-trans Palestinian Hamas supporter, right? That's a false dialectic. I can reject both of those, just like I can reject Tony Soprano and his enemies. I don't have to choose between, you know, Tony Soprano and the five families of New York. I can pick them somebody else or something totally different and reject that paradigm. But dialectical control, as we know, is a huge part of how people are duped and deceived. And to get back to Al-Qaeda as a test case, there's a great chapter in this book that I think is a little more on the grounds effective when it comes to understanding these types of people and their ideology and how different it is from the West. And it ties into the debate that I mentioned where Andrew Wilson debating Daniel Hakikachu. Eventually, the debate was just focused on the topic of cousin marriage, intermarriage with relatives, and the tendency IQ-wise as to what the product is. The product usually is very low IQs. And so in the debate, for example, Andrew went through many Islamic countries and the average IQ, which was pitiful to say the least. The response of Daniel was that, well, we don't care. And we will simply come into your countries by force, swords out, and with all of these low IQ people, destroy you. So it was a very awesome mask off moment for the top Muslim apologists, especially in the last year since their online Dawah apologetic has pretty much collapsed, to basically just be mask off now. And we've seen this with a lot of the pro-Indian influencers and importers with the open mask off, let's have infinity Indians coming into the West as well. They're all just becoming kind of mask off. And you can figure out who I'm talking about, people like Vivek, perhaps even at times people like Dinesh, the supposed humble Christian, also seems to have mask off moments where Western white civilization is getting its due revenge for things like colonialism. So when it comes down to it, they're all suddenly woke. All countries, all nations have a history. All powers, all empires have a history of trying to enslave people, lying to people, and colonizing. So what we really need to understand from these people, and the question that no one ever asks, is why is it wrong to colonize? Well, the Muslims will say that it's not wrong. We have a mandate to colonize. In that case, you're going to have to refute the religion itself to show that it's wrong to colonize. But in the case of who you're debating, it needs to be clear that they got to give some account as to why that's wrong. The left is just always constantly blabbering on and whining, complaining about colonization and colonizers, but they can never tell you why anything is objectively morally wrong. It's purely a subjective judgment. I mean, these are the same people that think that a man can become a woman, that you can just identify as whatever you want, right? Well, if that's the case, then there's nothing actually wrong in some moral objective sense with colonizing. So people need to stop being on the defensive, go on the offensive, turn the argument around and expose these people as complete frauds. That's what they are. And they need to expose these false religions, because until you get into noticing and understanding the contradictions in these ridiculous religions like Islam, they're also going to put you on the defensive. For many years, Muslims have been debating evangelicals, debating Christians, etc., putting everybody on the defensive. And now that in our apologetics, we have gone on the offensive, they have actually collapsed pretty miserably. And so Andrew did a great service to everybody by just showing, let's set aside all the theology, because in Islam, it's not really about theology. It's about power and dominance, ultimately. And let's talk about what this religion actually produces with things like cousin marriage, etc. And it ended up being a massive mask-off moment. The Muslims just say, yeah, it's fine. We're going to produce a giant retard civilization, and we're going to kill everybody with swords. Thank you for being open about it. And in this great book by Paul Williams, the second chapter goes into a mercenary who was a former military guy who went and spent several years in Afghanistan, I think back in the 80s or 90s. And he basically relates his whole experience with this intense, extreme form of Islam, which you could argue is just classical Islam, Salafi, Wahhabi, whatever you want to call it. It is the real old Islam. Living in this culture and the insane levels of just cult-like death cult behavior, the ways that you can't speak of anything in public, the ways that you must, everything is essentially punishable with death. Everything is essentially, anything that goes against this type of, Taliban religion, and he's talking about being there in Afghanistan under the Taliban rule, is basically like a cult. So the worst stories that you hear about, something like, Jim Jones or something like that, it's essentially the same type of structure and model as Jim Jones. For example, the former special ops mercenary guy says that he was told that you can never speak publicly to women or about women. You can never speak publicly about any kind of religion, especially not anything to do with Islam. You can never wear any significant religious symbol, such as a cross or the Star of David or anything outside of Islam. You must not squeeze hands or shake hands with any kind of Muslim civilian or cleric. You can never touch a member of Al-Qaeda or any member of the or any of the imams. Muslims wash their butts and wipe their backsides with their left hand, and so you must never shake hands left-handed. You must never pass food with your left hand. You must never stand to urinate in the presence of any Al-Qaeda or Taliban or imams. That is a sign of disrespect. Everyone must sit down to pee. Not joking. So, this is all just insane cult behavior. If you've studied cults, cults come up with absolutely insane, irrational rules to enforce obedience and behavior. That's the purpose of the rules. Control. Never blow your nose in the presence of anyone from the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, etc. It is an insult. Never stand up to eat. Never take a picture. Never talk to a woman. Never look at a woman or in her direction. not even to gaze at her. In fact, looking at a man for too long could signify that you're gay. So you must never drink alcohol. You must never point the soles of your feet at a host. It is a threat. So, you understand it's just insane love. This is the type of extreme Western-supported Islam that is used because it's a very effective death cult. Then in the book, Paul Williams goes into citing the history of the various imams and the mullahs that have supported and funded al-Qaeda. So you have a few billionaires, you have some Saudi money, et cetera, going into this. And I don't think it's accidental that Saudi money is also the billions of dollars that have gone into building all the mosques in America in the last, say, 20 years. This was detailed, for example, in Max Blumenthal's excellent book, most of which I agree with. Several sections I think are not very good towards the end, but at least the first two-thirds of the book are pretty good. But he goes into detail with Islamic funding of all the buildings of mosques and Islamic centers in the U.S. in the last 20 years, and it's tens of billions of dollars of Saudi money. So you understand this is happening by design, and it's not antithetical to Israel or to Zionism either, because Netanyahu, for example, says, why don't you take all these Palestinians, get them out of our country, why don't you take them, bring them into the U.S., take them, put them somewhere else. So you understand it's a false dialectic, and there's no reason why, and the rabbis have become mask off as well. They're happy to see, as they openly say, total open borders in Europe and in the West to destroy Edom or Christianity. For them, it's a win because it eventually leads to the coming of their Mashiach, their false Messiah. The book goes on to discuss the strategies and techniques of al-Qaeda, its tradecraft, how it works. And I think what was most interesting about these chapters was that it's very amenable to and very copy and paste from British intelligence and the CIA. Islam didn't really, these forms of Islam didn't really develop their own strategies because they're kind of low IQ. So what happened was you have the British intelligence earlier on, and then the CIA training a lot of these people, particularly in 1979 with Afghanistan and in terms of the Cold War, how to do counterintelligence and how to do these sorts of operations. And that's why it's so close to the style of guerrilla warfare that you see, for example, with the Phoenix program or with earlier CIA operations like Gladio. Both Douglas Valentine's book on the Phoenix program and the Paul Williams book on Gladio highlight the similarities between the terror training that went on with Gladio, the terror training that goes on with the Green Berets who were recruited into the Phoenix program, and the terror training and skills that al-Qaeda happens to possess. I wonder why. Well, it's because it's the same people training them. That's why. On record, and you can read all these books to talk about it. But why would that be surprising when Islam itself is a copy and paste fraud religion? It literally copies and pastes from the Babylonian Talmud of the Jews, from Christian texts, from the Torah, and from Gnostic texts in the early centuries of Christianity. It's cobbled together into an incoherent, jumbled mess known as the Quran, and tons and tons of hadiths or oral traditions that supposedly go back to Muhammad and his immediate circle. So this is a cult, and it's perfect for proxy war. This is the Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere. I am Jay Dyer.
It's hard to believe Christmas 2025 is almost here. And our 12 days of Christmas sale is going to end this Sunday at midnight. Site-wide on all the amazing supplements, the huge, giant, biggest selection of Patriot apparel, and more, 40% off. And that is a huge deal with apparel, because on average it's marked up 55-60%. So you're getting this stuff almost at cost. A gigantic selection. It's an adventure to wear these shirts out in public. You've got the 1776 Classic Americana line, all the Trump gear, the InfoWars gear, a lot of comedy fun stuff, a lot of really, really cool hoodies, hats, shirts, you name it. It is an adventure. If you haven't experienced it yet, wear this stuff out in public. Now, you'll get a lot of love, but leftist areas need to watch your back. They'll probably try to kill you. But the point is, it is an adventure to wear your Patriot uniform, your colors out in public. But the big thing that you want to take advantage of is 40% off on all the supplements. And a lot of these have been sold out, like Ultra Methylene Red. Super popular, proprietary, original formula, incredible. Goes great with Methylene Blue. Limited supply, back in stock. Bovine Colostrum, limited supply, back in stock. We just got stocked up on a whole bunch of other great items that have sold out as well. So take advantage of these deals right now at thealexshowstore.com and be the reason we stay on the air. We're close to shutting down InfoWars. We're still fighting on. But we have the Alex Jones Network, backup systems, and more. So when you go to thealexshowstore.com, I don't own that. Our sponsor does, Bigly, that owns the Alex Jones Network. And that will ensure that myself, the other host, and the crew stay on the air going into 2026 and beyond, when our voice and our analysis and our guests and our research is absolutely more critical than ever. Not just the general public, but people in government, not just here in America, but around the world. And major corporations are really listening to us. We're having a major effect. So thank you for being the reason we've been on the air. You are the InfoWar. And the InfoWar continues on as we the people fight. But we can't do it without your support. So do your Christmas shopping at thealexshowstore.com and get great products that enrich your life and your health and keep the tip of the spear on the air. It's a 360 win. It's a no-brainer. Thanks for your past support. Please take action now at thealexshowstore.com. And I thank you for your support.
Ho, 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 Merry Christmas.
How is Alex doing?
He's great. He lost a lot of weight.
I saw he's getting like, yeah, he's ready for the next
big. My friend
big.
Sean Johnson's training him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he gets up every morning. He works out for fucking hours. I think he's lost 70 pounds at this point. He looks fantastic, man.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic. He looks like he's 20 years younger.
I saw Alex Jones, and he looks really good, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. He's losing all weight. Taking back my health.
You're so good.
That's the only impression I could do.
Hey, Alex looks good, man.
Even Joey
lost some weight. He looks good.
Dude, he looks great.
Yeah.
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas!
We have a new product in at thealexshowstore.com. Now, you've been asking for DNA Force, but we brought it back, but even stronger. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want stamina, energy, clarity, with no letdown, and incredible health, this is it. Ultra DNA Revival. And it's key to understand that all of the ingredients in this are organically derived. You can buy synthetic versions that don't work as good. In some cases, it can be toxic for maybe 10% of the price. But despite the fact this has top-end ingredients, it's still very, very affordable. Now, you can go spend a day, and I hope you do, at thealexshowstore.com, looking at the ingredients that are in this, and then looking at how they're organically derived, and how each ingredient itself is a game changer for you and your family. So if you want to boost your clarity, your focus, your energy, your immune system, your overall health, this is the product for you. And the first run is now available right now at thealexshowstore.com.
Now, back to our program.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. My guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We were talking about the history of Al-Qaeda as a test case of religious engineering and a tool, a weapon to destroy Western civilization, among many, and that that's not antithetical to Israel or Zionism or rabbinical interests, because they see it as a means of destroying Edom, which they identify as Christianity in total and Western civilization. But really, Islam began as a warlord religion. It began as a process of Muhammad taking over various areas such as Mecca through his campaigns and fighting against both Jews and Christians. But initially, he thought that, and this is admitted by many Muslims that we've interviewed and even by scholars and by Williams in the text, that Muhammad originally thought that he could have a true religion that would unite Muslims, Christians, and Jews. He thought it was the true Jerusalem, or the true monotheism, and that he could establish within a synagogue, a specific type of worship that was an early Judaized Talmudic blending of all three. So it actually begins as a Judaizing religion. And that explains, by the way, if you ever read the Quran, why within the first I don't know, if you get into the first several chapters, first 10 or 12 chapters of the Quran, you start to notice that these almost copy and paste arbitrary ceremonial commands, something like out of Leviticus or Numbers or Deuteronomy, just sort of all cobbled together about what you do and don't touch, etc. But there's no explanation for why. So it's almost like there's all these arbitrary washings and cleansings that Allah supposedly commands, but they have no purpose other than just simply Allah wills it. In Christianity, you have, for example, a purpose for all of those Levitical ceremonies and rules. They're types, they're foreshadowings of the work of the Messiah. So the baptisms, the washings of the Levitical law, for example, pre-signify Christian baptism. They're types pointing to the fulfillment of Christ's baptism. There's reasons why you don't, for example, eat unclean meats in the Old Testament, because it was supposed to be a pedagogical rule teaching people the morals of right and wrong action. So when the Messiah comes, that pedagogical rule is fulfilled. It's not, its purpose has been completed. And as Paul says to Timothy, there's no meats now that are unclean. That's all been fulfilled. But for Judaism, and by extension for the Judaized religion of Islam, those laws and ceremonies don't have any greater telos or purpose other than just simply that Allah wills them. They're arbitrary. But even the history of Islam, it's interesting that it went from an early pro-Judaic phase, as Williams notes, very, very early on in the 600s, to eventually when Muhammad realized that he couldn't get everybody on board, neither with the Jews nor the Christians, because his claim to be a prophet failed miserably, because it was inconsistent with all the previously established means by which you identify a true prophet, namely that the new revelation has to be consistent with the old revelation. Well, Muhammad decided, okay, well then all the old revelation is corrupt, and now you'll submit or else you'll die. And so eventually he ends up in giant wars with Jewish groups, the Bani Qurayza, with whom the Muslims had a pact. Eventually, they end up in a giant war with them. The prophet responded by ordering the execution of almost 1,000 Jewish men and putting the women and children into slavery. So you notice that this initial attempt to be BFF with Jews fails, and then he ends up in battles with Christians as well, some of which he wins and some of which he loses. But eventually, after raiding Mecca, the Quran turns into a more of a warfare-minded tractate. There's these phases within the Quran itself in terms of the life of the prophet, to where early on, oh, we're all people of the book. Oh, then it's like, nah, actually, we all need to just go to war. And the way that we know the Quran is true, he says, and this is mentioned by Williams, is also because it's just beautiful language. If you recite it, you'll see how pretty and beautiful and awesome it is. That's actually one of the arguments for why it's true. And you can see why this type of an argumentation tends to appeal to not very high IQ people. As Islam spreads and as the surahs get copied, turns out there are many versions of Islam in terms of the various Qurans that are out there. And after the death of Muhammad, individual surahs existed only in chaotic, incomplete conditions. Some were recorded on stone tablets, some on wood, some on bone and fragments of cloth. And then in 652, the third caliph, Uthman, orders the scattered text to be gathered together and edited. The language of the Quran is Arabic because Allah gave the message in Arabic. And thus, Arabic exists in heaven and is the true heavenly language. So it is blasphemous to translate the 6,239 surahs into any other language. So Uthman burns all of the supposedly corrupted texts. But the problem is, Uthman's not identified as a prophet. So how do we know that Uthman collected together the correct collection? Just like we might ask, you know, somebody who's, say, a Protestant, how do you know that you have the right biblical canon, the right list of books? You could ask the same question to the Muslim. How do we know that the Quran actually has the right surahs all collected together, because now we're just actually relying on the decision of the Caliph Uthman. And as far as I'm aware, if Uthman isn't a prophet, this becomes a very significant problem for Islam. Well, there's also, if you don't know, an eternal Quran that exists along with Allah in heaven. So, by the way, there's more than one eternal thing. So, supposedly this is a Unitarian religion, but now there's multiple things that are eternal. The Quran, as it was penned by Allah, has been kept for aeons in heaven. It is the most sacred of all texts, the mother of books. And the people of Islam, which includes supposedly the Jews, the Old Testament, the Torah, and the Christians who have the Injil or the gospel given to Jesus, they actually think that the Injil is a book that kind of floated down from heaven to a scroll. They don't realize that the gospel is the name for a type of literature that records the teaching of Jesus by the apostles. They actually, and you can tell this is how like low IQ this was, they thought when they heard the gospel, whenever Muhammad heard this, because he was illiterate, he thought it was a book. But he didn't understand that for centuries, Christians have been talking about the gospels, which are recorded texts, but the gospel is not a book. It's not a scroll. It is the evangelium. It is the saving message of Jesus. So Muhammad then presented himself as the final prophet of all the prior prophets. And he, quote, simplified the religion to five pillars of creed, prayer, almsgiving, fasting, etc., and the Hajj, or the pilgrimage to Mecca. So you can notice, you can tell that, again, these elements are cribbed from both Judaism and Byzantine Christianity. This is why Islam has onion domes that comes out of Byzantium. This is why you have the pilgrimage that you make to Jerusalem, if you're Jewish, that your Aliyah, is Muhammad copies that and creates the pilgrimage to Mecca. You have principles of fasting that are ripped out of, for example, the month of Ramadan. That's also directly borrowed from Talmudic practices of fasting and so forth. So even the washings, the ritual washings, the wudu, that's all directly from the Old Testament. And there's really no purpose to these things other than that Allah demands it. So the third caliph, as we said, Uthman, under his rule, conquest continued to Libya in the west and the Indian subcontinent. But the caliph created dissension when he appointed his Umayyad kinsmen to enter every key political position. There were complaints about nepotism and corruption throughout the Muslim empire. And in 656, Egyptian Muslims stormed the imperial palace and killed Uthman as he sat reading his Quran. After Uthman's murder, Ali became the fourth caliph, and his appointment was opposed by two factions. So immediately this warlord religion fell into warring battles. And this is where we begin to get the rise of the Shia Muslims, who have a completely different idea of, basically they kind of believe in a papal infallibility for their descendants. And so you get Sunni, Shia, and then the mystical variant known as Sufi Islam, much of which is considered to be heterodox, although there are a lot of parallels between Shia and Sufi due to them both explicitly adopting Neoplatonism. And that's not me, that's actually directly from Harvard Islamic scholars that we've done shows, podcasts, and debates with. So you can tell that whether it's Shia or whether it's Sunni, Islam is in many ways very much a copy-paste job, even to the point of, as we said, with Shia Islam, their infallible Muslim succession of their imams. It's almost exactly like what the papacy has. It's pretty clearly a copy-paste, and that's what you get in most cults, right? Cults will copy-paste from the authentic, real religion. Eventually, though, what happened is that as Islam kind of had its golden age and this is from Islamic scholars themselves, this golden age began to wane as the Ottoman Empire collapsed and died. And Islam has been in what they've called a kind of sleep phase, a downward trend, believe it or not, even though there is a population boom of Islamic countries. The religion itself, in terms of global power, is on a many centuries decline, even after Byzantium fell. So what's happened then is that they have made a push to revive the religion, to promote the religion, and that has led to Western countries dealing with and cooperating with or opposing at various levels. So some, for example, in the British imperial structure thought that the best way to combat this religion was to eventually kind of adopt it and control certain sectors of it, even including the Muslim Brotherhood. This is why there were many OSS, British intelligence, and CIA links between the Muslim Brotherhood, and even going back to the beginning of the Muslim Brotherhood being originally supported by British intelligence, because the thought was, well, perhaps we can run these types of groups, aid these groups, control these groups, and they can be kind of a proxy war force for us. Exact same thing with Al-Qaeda and then with ISIS. They only serve and typically serve the Western power elite perspective. And that's why they take down people that tend to be a problem like Assad. Now, that doesn't mean that I have to agree with his Alawite ideology. It's just a fact that the Islam that was more amenable to development, technology, industrialization, that type of Islam, regardless of whether it's true or false, had to be opposed because this type of insane Judaizing, and by the way, they still circumcise. So you understand, another example of how Islam is a Judaizing heresy is that they practice circumcision in many, many, many countries. Why? Because Allah told Abraham to. So again, there's no theological understanding of the purpose of it. You just do it because you're told. Again, it's a very unquestioning, unthinking type of cult, hence why you get suicide bombers and why you get mind-controlled patsies. It's a perfect religion for creating that. It's a death cult because it doesn't have a meaning. There's no deeper significance for things like circumcision as you would have in Christianity. Rather, it is a simplistic cult. So hopefully that gives kind of a shed some light on how these types of cults are perfect for intelligence agencies to kind of get in and retool and steer in the direction that they want. This is precisely why so many crucial Al-Qaeda people or ISIS people just happen to have worked with the CIA so closely or with the FBI so closely. For example, if you go to Management of Savagery, the Max Blumenthal book, the first 100 pages are excellent for showing this. He begins the book talking about what I talked about. For example, the Saudis in the CIA are the ones that are the main funders and supporters and trainers of the Mujahideen. They are the real ethos from which we get Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is actually born out of the U.S. as Operation Cyclone and National Security Directive 166 in 1980. You'll know about this as Charlie Wilson's war, the proxy war of the CIA supporting the Afghan CIA warlords. And people like Hekmatyar and Hezb-e-Islam, which are militias that were trained to be proxy forces to fight the Soviets. This included then people like the National Endowment for Democracy, fronts for the CIA to recruit Muslims like the Paris Review, entities like Freedom House. And you'll notice, well, that's interesting because these NGOs are the same NGOs involved in things like the Ukraine schism, National Endowment for Democracy, the support for the neo-Nazis in Ukraine against Russia. It's the very same structure. And that's why John McCain can be flying over there and being pictured with Al-Qaeda al-Nusra guys and also flying over to Ukraine and being pictured with right sector Pravi neo-Nazi guys, the supposed neocon. Well, he is a neocon because neocons actually don't hate Islam. Neoconservative Zionists love radical Islam. And that's the great secret that normie conservatives still need to figure out. They still can't understand that, no, actually, a lot of what we're talking about, people like the Blind Sheikh, these are CIA assets and operatives for many, many years on record. And they're traveling all around the world and doing all this kind of stuff. People like the Blind Sheikh Ali Muhammad, whose handler was al-Zawahiri. Well, it starts to call all this into question. And this is no small matter, because if you go back to the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, the Afghani jihad actually spread to Egypt, Algeria, and even the Philippines. The Philippines had radical Islamic groups being trained, funded, and armed by the CIA. And then it spreads to the Bosnian world. In fact, $200 million was sent through relief agencies via the CIA and the Saudis into the Bosnian war to support entities like the Kosovo Liberation Army, the KLA, which was a fake criminal organization that was, I mean, it's real, but I'm saying it's not a real Islamic, it's a CIA-created thing funded and trained so that Muslim radicals and leftist socialists could be united together to fight against, together with organized crime, to fight against Milosevic. And also, all of these names that you see, you'll see these Islamic groups like the, you know, Jihad Front, Al-Jihad, you know, there's a million different little names of groups that get created. They're all kind of the same model and structure. So don't get lost in all the names and the terms, because all these little groups, there was one called Americans, people in the West are not used to these. The Abu Sayyaf organization, I mean, all of these things, the Benevolence International, all of these different things are just fronts and copies for the same technology of creating and funding cutouts to undermine and to destabilize. That's the key point. And I think one of the excellent points that was made in another one of the necessary texts in this domain, Secret Affairs, by Mark Curtis, who is not a conspiracy theorist. He's actually a Royal Society researcher. So it's a very, very important admission text. He listed, as you guys know at the beginning, five key uses of radical Islam by Western intelligence. And this goes back 100 years, right? Why would they want to use this? Why have they seen radical Islam as such a powerful, potent, useful proxy group? And this also includes Israeli intelligence. Remember, Victor Ostrovsky wrote two books, one of which is By Way of Deception, his first suppressed book on the history of the inner workings of the Mossad from his own time there. And then the next book that he wrote, The Other Side of Deception, which explicitly in three or four different places mentions how Israel and the Mossad have always funded and supported Muslim Brotherhood and things like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Now, that book came out before ISIS, but the point is that the same group, the same type of thing like Al-Qaeda, the radical Sunni types of groups, he says, yeah, of course we sent weapons to Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Of course we sent weapons to, you know, groups in Jordan or, you know, Al-Qaeda groups in, you know, Syria, because that is a powerful tool to destabilize the PLO, to destabilize you know, Hezbollah, to destabilize Assad. He's very candid and very open about it. And so the response, of course, by when you talk about this, and I've experienced this response for 15 or so years talking about this, oh, you're an anti-Semite, you hate Jewish people. Oh, so Victor Ostrovsky is an anti-Semite when he talks about the very thing that they do? Like, it makes no sense. But that whole line of being called racist, that is all falling away. That's broken. The spell has been broken. People don't care about being called bad names when pointing out hypocrisy. So what are the five uses of Islam by the Western intelligence forces? Well, originally they were anti-Soviet. And so this anti-red Cold War fervor, just like the Brits had done with Sunni groups back at the time of World War I and to oppose the Ottomans, this radical Islamic stuff could be seen as a way to fight a battle for you, proxy war. So instead of directly having some gigantic conflict with the Soviets in Afghanistan, instead of sending a bunch of U.S. troops, we're going to fund and aid the Mujahideen there to get the Soviets embroiled in a conflict, which would eventually wear them down. And that's exactly what happened. So Carter, Brzezinski, Gates, they were actually correct in the tactical approach of that strategy to wear down the Soviet Union, and it worked. So they function as anti-Soviet, anti-communist, and they also function as conservative muscle. In other words, a supposed Cold War fight against militant global atheism. But you'll notice how much of a false dialectic that is, right? So just because the CIA and British intelligence, for example, or Israeli Mossad are funding and aiding, say, anti-Soviet movements, that doesn't make Soviets good. It also doesn't make Al-Qaeda good. In geopolitics, it's not about good guy, bad guy. It's about power and pragmatism. Radical Islam is also a massive destabilizing force. Some years back, I did an interview with a very prominent Russian analyst, Andrew Korybko, and he had written a book about Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and it's a great book. His thesis was that they are a skeleton key that anywhere they go in, and when you see the said, oh, ISIS just attacked in Boko Haram, attacked in Africa, whatever, that is a region probably where there's natural resources. And so this destabilization functions to allow the rebuilding of that region or the coming in of the Western troops and soldiers later to fix the conflict, to solve the conflict, peacekeeping troops, etc. That ends up being usually something related to the military-industrial complex and a grab for oil, land, resources, rare earth minerals, especially in Africa, etc. So they become a proxy, they become a destabilizing force and a proxy military force. They also can then be political tools. So once they're there, if you still have control of that group, they can continue to be manipulated, continue to serve as an excuse. Oh, we've got to, you know, 10 years later, oh, we got to go back into this country because Al-Qaeda is there, right? It just becomes a political convenient excuse that can be used at any time. And the key point is that almost always it's about oil and energy and resources. So that's the reality behind these groups. That's the reality behind why we are experiencing this in the West, this influx, and how they want to take down Christianity and Western civilization. It's a joint venture between rabbinical ideology and Muslim ideology, both of which are Talmudic. This is Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. You can get my books at my website in the shop. Support Alex by going to the Alex Jones store.
My fellow InfoWarriors, you have until this Sunday, December 14th, 2025 at midnight to get 40% off site-wide. That means all the incredible supplements, methylene red, back in stock, bovine colostrum, ultramethylene blue, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, ultimate life force spike protein detox. It's all in stock right now, and it funds the tip of the spear. These are incredible products. Do your Christmas shopping at thealexjonesstore.com. Enrich your health, your vitality, your life. They make great gifts, and it gives the gift to all of us of keeping this operation on the air in the face of the globalists. And 40% off is a huge deal with the t-shirts, the ball caps, the hoodies, the sweaters, all the apparel, because there's only about 60% markup in the apparel. So that is one hell of a deal. Please do your Christmas shopping right now at thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason we stay on the air. Thank you for being the heart of this operation. Thank you for your support. You have till this Sunday, site-wide, 40% off. If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexJonesStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. But now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rated. 5 milligrams of this a day. Bottom line, this is tasty, it's delicious, it's good for you, it helps children, it helps middle-aged people, and it really helps old people. If you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.